Welcome back to Pracademically Speaking, where data meets the real world in corrections. Today we're doing something a little bit different. Think of this as a greatest hits album, only instead of music, we're revisiting three of our past evaluations, the SIP HOPE program, our residential relocation initiative, and the therapeutic community program. We'll unpack what we've learned, what surprised us, and why these studies still matter for the work we're doing today. Consider this a refresher course, because even in corrections, sometimes it pays to review the evidence before moving forward. Well, hi, I'm Jeff Coleman, today's host for Pracademically Speaking, a conversation where ideas and numbers get real. Today, I'm joined by the author of this podcast and repeat guest, Dr. Brett Buckland, Director of Planning, Research, and Statistics at the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Today, we're going to have a conversation on three prior evaluations that Brett's team has conducted. Brett, welcome back to your podcast.
Thanks, Jeff.
Looking forward to
this
discussion.
Thanks for being on.
Let's start with this idea of therapeutic community evaluation. Tell us about that evaluation and exactly what you found.
Sure. Well, first, let me tell you about the therapeutic community program. The therapeutic community program is an intense drug treatment program. It's our most intense drug treatment program. It's 4 months in length. It actually used to be 6 months. And way back in the day, it actually used to be a year-long program, but it's 4 months now. And the idea is...
Who qualifies for that? How do you get into this?
That's a good question. So we implement an assessment screening tool called the Texas Christian University Drug Screen. And if you score 3 or above on that, you meet the diagnostic and statistical criteria for the DSM criteria for a substance use disorder.
Okay.
And if you score previously a 6 or above, I'll get into that, previously a 6 or above, then you are high enough need that you go into the therapeutic community.
Okay.
So that's how you get in, is you get scored on this assessment. And we actually have a new assessment now. But at the time of this evaluation, we were using that Texas Christian University drug screen.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but what percentage of inmates on intake?
About 2/3.
Okay.
Have a substance.
So it's pretty significant.
Yeah. Not all of them get the therapeutic community.
Got it.
So the other option we have is outpatient. And outpatient is somewhat of a misnomer because it's still in prison, but it's just outpatient. It's different than a therapeutic community, because a therapeutic community, you actually live together on the unit.
I see.
So the idea is that it's not just your formal groups that are treatment, but it's the interactions on the block day-to-day, holding each other accountable. So you live together on a dedicated treatment unit called a therapeutic community. That's what's called a therapeutic community. But the formal program itself is 4 months in length. Again, they all live together on a dedicated unit. And so we were asked to evaluate that program. We've evaluated this program a number of times over the years. The first evaluation we did was at SEI Chester, and we did a randomized controlled trial, which is like the gold standard for doing this evaluation. And that was when it was a longer program. It was 6 months, and we found that it did not reduce recidivism appreciably. And so we reduced it to a 4-month program. And then this current evaluation is...
What's the headline on this evaluation?
The headline on the evaluation is that... we did not find that it reduced recidivism or drug relapse, measured by drug testing results after release. So it did not reduce recidivism or drug relapse. And the way that we compared, we looked at people who were on that assessment score just over the threshold and just under the threshold. And the logic is that those people are similar enough with a 1-point difference that they could have gone to outpatient or therapeutic community. The technical term for that evaluation is, here's a million-dollar word, it's called a regression discontinuity design.
And that means?
It means that we look at people right on either side of a cut point on a score and assume that they're close enough, with the only difference being one group got one program, the other group got the other.
I see.
In this case, one got the therapeutic community, the other got the less intense outpatient. And so we compared those two groups, and what we found was they did similar They didn't do appreciably. One didn't do better or worse in terms of drug relapse and recidivism.
So to be clear, when you're making that evaluation and you have these findings, there's not a paragraph in your findings that says, here are our recommendations.
Right? We do actually have recommendations in this. So the recommendation that was implemented, we did this back in 2019. And the recommendation was that we change the threshold up to 7.
I see.
From 6. So before it was 6 and above, you got into the therapeutic community, and we moved it up to 7. And what that meant was we saved about $8.1 million.
Okay.
Because it's cheaper. It's about $4,000 to $5,000 cheaper to do an outpatient program than a therapeutic community. And if there are no difference in outcomes, then why not push more people on the edge down to the outpatient rather than therapeutic community? So that's what we did. We moved that cut point to a higher bar, up to 7, which resulted in more people coming down to outpatient rather than getting the more intense therapeutic community.
I want to stay here for just another second. So if you are, in very plain language, if you are a person who is evaluating whether or not to continue this experiment or adjust it, what's your advice? Or your team's advice, rather?
The program itself or evaluating the changes that we've made?
Well,
or both?
I guess both.
Yeah. So we haven't done an evaluation since 2019, since we changed that cut point.
Okay.
I think it's fair to go back and take another look sometime soon and see if we're getting any better or different outcomes. But it does seem like there isn't much of a difference between the therapeutic community and the less intense program.
Okay.
And actually, the next evaluation we'll get to, I think, will highlight why I think that is, that we're not seeing those differences.
Okay. Well, let's move on then to another acronym, and I want you to unpack the acronym, the SIP HOPE evaluation. Tell us about it, and in plain language, what is SIP HOPE?
Yeah, so SIP HOPE is a combination of two standalone programs, one SIP, mm-hmm. the other one HOPE. Mm-hmm. SIP, we love our acronyms and corrections. SIP stands for State Intermediate Punishment. It was actually renamed to SDTP now. It's the same program essentially, but now it's called SDTP, or State Drug Treatment Program. So at the time it was called SIP, now it's SDTP. And the program is a flat 24-month sentence program, so that you get sentenced to this program for a flat 24 months, of which only about 8 to 9 months are in prison. Now, these are individuals who normally would be serving maybe 3-4 years in prison. So they get a break by being in this program.
And what is the hope of the program?
It's a drug treatment program. Mm-hmm. And so it's a 4-phase program. Phase 1 is in prison, and that's 8 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. Phase 2 is in inpatient, but in the community, so you can't go out. You have to stay inpatient, and that's 2 months, roughly. Phase 3 is an outpatient, but you would be living in a halfway house, a community correction center. You could live at home and report for outpatient treatment as well.
Pretty heavy monitoring.
Yeah, heavy monitoring still. And then phase 4 is the remainder, the balance of that 24-month flat sentence. And it would just be continued monitoring, continue treatment. But the key point, again, is it's a drug treatment program where you get an incentive to participate because you get time off of your normal sentence. Rather than serving a longer sentence, you would only spend roughly 8 to 9 months in prison, and then the rest of it in the community, getting treatment in the community where you can go out, at least in phase 3 and 4, you can go out and work, reunite with your family. You're not in prison. So it's an alternative sentence program.
So what's the headline here?
Well, let me get to the other part of that. So that's SIP.
Okay.
And
the HOPE part.
No, that's the SIP part.
I see.
That's SIP. That's the SIP part. So HOPE is a separate initiative that we had not up until this point tried in Pennsylvania, but has a lot of research. It actually, we've talked about this on the podcast before. It actually started with the Hawaii HOPE program, and it's basically a structure discipline approach where you replace severe punishment with swift and immediate and quick and consistent responses. So the idea is rather than give someone a delayed and a delayed punishment for a misconduct or misbehavior, you give swift consequences, immediate and consistent. That's the idea. There's a lot of research behind it. We had not, again, tried it. So what we were trying to do here was say, we had research that said this SIP program was effective, mm-hmm. and we had national research that said the HOPE approach was effective. So we said, what if we put
and
those—
HOPE doesn't stand for anything?
Hawaii Opportunity Probation with Enforcement.
Okay.
It started in Hawaii.
Got it.
So that was the original HOPE acronym, Hawaii Opportunity Probation with Enforcement. We had not tried it again, but what we wanted to see is, can we combine the discipline of HOPE with the structured treatment of SIP? And we knew SIP worked. We had national research that HOPE worked. So let's put them together, mm-hmm. hence the hyphenated SIP HOPE. That was the pilot program. Mm-hmm. So let's put HOPE in the SIP program.
That makes sense. Right.
And see if it's kind of like, you know, do your kids need love or discipline?
Right.
Yes, they need both, right?
Right. Like,
so you got the treatment part of SIP, mm-hmm. you got the discipline part of HOPE. Let's put them together and see if they work. And so now I'll get to the headline. So the headline here is that we did find a 50% reduction in rearrest.
Wow.
It's a pretty large reduction.
Right.
And this small pilot, the small pilot was done in Scranton in Pittsburgh.
How small is a small pilot?
So a couple hundred participants.
Okay.
I think total was 171 participants in this small pilot.
And this is over 12 months or?
A little bit longer than that. I think it was an 18-month pilot. Because you have to give enough time for people to go through the program and then follow them up for release. So 50% less likely to be rearrested 1 year after the program. 19% more likely to complete the treatment successfully. Also more likely, interesting enough, to be returned to prison, but less likely to be arrested. But if you think about the HOPE, it's consistent and immediate, but moderate. And so whereas things would kind of be ignored before, they're responded to immediately. And so at least in the short term, people might be returned more to prison for violations, but in the long term, their behavior is improving, so they're not getting rearrested.
So
that's kind of actually built into the model that short term you might get disciplined more, even though long term the effects are lower arrest, lower criminal behavior.
Recommendations out of this?
Obviously, the results are very promising, very good, and the recommendations are to continue this. This maybe would be good for another podcast episode, but we're expanding this into other areas as well, the HOPE approach to other areas of community corrections and parole supervision and reentry and in-prison behavior compliance too. So we're using that principle from the HOPE program, again, kind of saying like, let's put discipline together with treatment, and that's the magic that seems to work.
Well, Dr. Buckland, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll continue our discussion on program evaluations at the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Please share or cite any of the guests or content you hear on this podcast, but do not alter the audio in any way. Check for resources or publications mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Now, back to the host.
We are back with Dr. Brett Buckland, Director of Planning, Research, and Statistics at Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. We've been discussing some of the previous program evaluations his team has conducted. And Dr. Buckland, the last one of the three evaluations to discuss today is the residential relocation study. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, sure. We've actually teased this one on a previous episode as well, but the idea here is for a long time the conventional wisdom in reentry, which is how to help individuals return after prison to the community. The conventional wisdom is that it's best to send people back home to where they're to the community where they came from, to the family where they came from. And that is a good idea in theory. But in practice, that's not always a good idea. If you think
Their home environment wasn't perhaps the healthiest to begin with.
Their home environment perhaps wasn't the healthiest. Their community wasn't the healthiest.
Right.
So maybe they do have a strong family support, but they also have friends that live in that neighborhood
right.
who they got in trouble with, they mm-hmm. ran around with, mm-hmm. And was part of the reason that they went down the path that they went to. And so what actually teased this idea for us here to try is a study that came out of New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. You remember Hurricane mm-hmm, Katrina.
Sure.
And there was a really brilliant research colleague of mine who looked at inmates who were released just post-Hurricane Katrina but couldn't – they were forced – we call it a natural experiment. They couldn't go back to New Orleans because there was no back.
Right.
So they were forced to go to Texas after prison and some other places. And he was like, well, this is interesting. This is a natural experiment. Let's see what happens with recidivism rates compared to before practice was they went home.
That's a great question. Yeah.
Right? And he found surprisingly – or maybe not surprisingly, actually recidivism rates went down after Hurricane Katrina and they were forced to be relocated. So that got us thinking, here, like, I thought about it, and I was like, I wonder if we could try that here.
Right.
So we set up an experiment here. This one is another. It's a randomized controlled trial, so the gold standard, where we were able to – now, we're not forcing people to relocate, but we're asking, would you volunteer for a chance to relocate? So they have to opt into the program, to the pilot program, and these are individuals getting ready to be released.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're willing to participate, then we essentially flip the coin. And we had people who were from Philadelphia, Harrisburg, and Pittsburgh. So if you were from Philadelphia and we flipped the coin mm-hmm. and it came up you have to relocate, then you had to go either to Harrisburg or Pittsburgh.
Hmm.
If it came up tails, then you got to go back home to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to compare and see mm-hmm. those who got to go home compared to those who had to go across the state to Harrisburg or Pittsburgh in the case
Seems
of
like
Philadelphia.
A good way to evaluate. Yeah.
And then let's see what the outcomes are. And we provided them support through because we have a large network of halfway houses. Again, we call this community correction centers. So these are all individuals going transition. So it's not like we're just dumping them in a new community and saying, hey, go at it. We're putting them through a halfway house in another area.
Okay.
And so we ran that. Like I said, it was in Philly, Pittsburgh, and Harrisburg, individuals originally from those areas, and flipped the coin, and they got a 50-50 chance of going home yep. or going somewhere else. And the headline there was similar to the New Orleans study. We did see a small reduction in recidivism on whole. For
How
those.
Small is small?
So 7% after 1 year.
Okay.
Not as much as the previous study where we saw 50%. Uh-huh. That's pretty dry, but 7%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something. We also noticed that it was especially beneficial for those with a drug use problem and who had weak social ties, which I think both cases make sense. If for drug use, you're probably going to get in trouble with if you go back home because you know where to get drugs, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. you know where to go. You know the places. Mm-hmm. It's going to take you a little bit longer to figure that out in a new place. And maybe in the meantime, you get help and continue to get help and you get better and you don't return to it. Weak social ties, again, if you don't have positive family support to begin with, then you could see how it would be beneficial to relocate.
Isn't that part of kind of a standard evaluation when somebody's preparing to leave the system to go back into community, even under some kind of monitoring, that you're evaluating their support system before they go in, before they leave?
In theory. I mean, I think that's right. best practice. With the number of individuals that we're releasing in a year, I think I'm not sure that always happens, but it probably is a case-by-case thing. And jump into policy recommendations coming out of this evaluation, I think – that's exactly what I would say. I wouldn't say that it's a one-size-fits-all. So I wouldn't say everybody needs to get a new start somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Or conversely, everybody needs to go home, which was the conventional wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got to upturn some of that conventional wisdom that everybody needs to go back home. But on a case-by-case basis, like you suggested, I think looking at the individual, saying, based on what we know about them, is it better to try to help them get a new start somewhere else, or return them back to where
so much has to do with their ability to self-evaluate and know what that environment is like.
Yep.
30 seconds, any final thoughts from all of this, putting it all together? These are pretty big evaluations.
Yeah. One, I think it's really hard to reduce recidivism. The first evaluation, we found no impact. The second one was a small pilot, but we found a pretty large impact. Mm-hmm. And the third one was a pretty small impact, 7%. So, you know, one, no effect, two, small effect, third one, larger effect. But it's hard overall to reduce recidivism. Everybody in this business kind of knows that. And so it's not like there's a one-size-fits-all program or a panacea of, you know, just run them through this and you're going to fix recidivism. I think the other part I alluded to before is that combining treatment with discipline and structure seems to be the sweet spot. Treatment alone may not be effective. Discipline alone I don't think we think is effective, but combining those two things together I think is another lesson if I tie the thread between these three evaluations. And lastly, I would just say that this type of program evaluation is something that can be done and should be done, and for programs and policies that we implement. And I would encourage, you know, other departments of corrections and agencies to do similar evaluations. It can be done. We partnered with external evaluators, which I didn't mention, but folks from UPenn, from Drexel, from University of Maryland on these various studies we talked about today, and they can help with those as well. So this work is possible, and it's important to inform policy and what's effective.
And a very clear line between data, research, and some very, very clear recommendations. So Dr. Buckland, we are out of time. Thanks for the discussion. It, as always, is great to hear your insight on these studies and what they mean. Friends, we will be back in a few weeks with a brand new episode of Pracademically Speaking.
Thanks for listening. Check out Pracademically Speaking wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the conversation where ideas and numbers get real, on the ground and in practice. Pracademically Speaking is a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.